Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Journalist and tech entrepreneur Mark Little, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me again,
Brendan. So Mark, what an extraordinary week in America as the Trump show unfolded. And like Christian evangelists, country music, hip-hop stars, tech billionaires, I mean, it was all there. And then, of course, we saw major changes around immigration and gender and all those kind of things. So you're going to help us unravel what it all means in a broader sense, I guess, the culture of it all. If we set the scene first, so I guess the backdrop to all this is that the old rules of politics and media are gone, and you've touched on this with us before. Tell me about the age of attention.
So I think we have an assumption that we still live in a world where history is made by politicians elected by people who get informed by experts. And that's the age where information is power. But we don't live in that anymore. We live in a society which is essentially spectacle, where the loudest voices can grab our attention, and essentially they're the people of power. People who can actually find a way to touch what we're, you know, we feel rather than what we're thinking. And that's why when I watched Donald Trump's inauguration, I thought maybe I'm missing something and our conversation needs a little element of, aside from the technology, the politics, the oligarchy, all that stuff, and the stuff we heard before at the panel.
Yeah.
What about the culture of America? Is this age of attention now creating some sort of new counterculture that basically Trump is a symptom of, not just a creator of? And that's what I've been thinking a lot about this week.
Okay. So I guess it's about the America is a place of myth and the story that Trump and the MAGA crowd are telling us. So what story were they, as much as telling us, showing us this week about this new American era?
The line that I think grabs me when I look back is, the spirit of the frontier is written in our heart. Now, what he was trying to do there was, he's been MAGA, right? A nostalgia past. He's now got the technology bros to give him a future. What he's tapping into, I think, is the spirit of a new American counterculture, which is an absolute rejection of the elites. It's the spirit of the frontier, which was more about the outlaw than it was about the sheriff. It's the mythology of, let's leave this place we're in right now, let's kick off the establishment and go search for a new frontier. And I think the reason why that was such an incredibly apt choice for him is that he does, I think, represent the time for America where people are looking for ways to reject the establishment. And it's a bit like the revenge of the 60s, when back in the 60s you had Nixon, the moral majority, and this counterculture came along and celebrated the rebel, the authentic soul on the road. It was Easy Rider, it was Bonnie and Clyde, it was Jim Morrison, it was LSD, Timothy Leary. It was this kickback against the establishment. And I think when you see MAGA, but also a whole other things that are happening in American culture, you see why that frontier spirit that was there at the counterculture is so important today. So it's all about this personal freedom and the struggle of the individual against the hostile environment of the frontier. Okay. Strip away the social justice, social change of the 60s. And it's exactly like that counterculture.
Which will confuse people, because the 60s counterculture obviously was, about kicking against the kind of right-wing establishment and all those people who stand with Trump, the evangelism, Christians, morality, all of that. But you're saying that it's the same kind of thing in a different guise.
Yeah, so the story conservatives will tell you is that the counterculture of the 60s created a new liberal elite who went on to dominate the universities and the culture and the media. And they eventually lost touch with real America. And they over-indexed on social justice and they forgot personal freedom. And that's what the conservative MAGA people will tell you. And they use that to roll back the great advances and the progress made since then. But a lot of younger people, I think, particularly see this and go, maybe they have a point. Like if you think about a young person who suffered from, let's say, the economic crisis of 2008, or an African-American who felt this liberal elite only cares about social justice. What about economic justice? Or you see a young person coming out of pandemic who was in lockdown at a critical moment of their maturing. Now they're in a society thinking, I'm with the people who say, kick back against the establishment. I'm in a culture that's not dominated by Hollywood. It's TikTok. So there's a lot of these people who are not true believers of this conservative argument that like are kind of ambivalent about Trump, but they're looking at him going, yeah, I see what he's saying. We're being dominated by this elite that doesn't care about us. And I think that's a lot of the power.
It's extraordinary.
Of this.
So this is another 60s moment in a way. They are the counterculture now. And of course, the mainstream railed against the counterculture back then. Are we just the mainstream railing against the new counterculture?
Well, it's funny. I think there's a kind of a core engine room, right? That's the MAGA core, right? So it's the manosphere we've talked about, the Joe Rogans and the Logan Pauls and the, you know, now Mark Zuckerberg with his masculine energy. And it's the tech bros who really are about the spirit of the frontier. Remember, the counterculture created Silicon Valley. Like, you look at Steve Jobs, he took LSD and celebrated the hippies, right? So they're of that part. Then you got the crypto bros, and then I think you have the hardcore conspiracy theorists, like the new FBI chief, Kash Patel. He once said there's no such thing as a coincidence, and that's why you see the reopening of the Kennedy files. So that's the hardcore. But then there's the adjacent people, like the comedians, the Dave Chappelles of the time, who rail against cancel culture. Again, ambivalent about Trump, but in their mind, they're just doing what Lenny Bruce and George Carlin, the heroes of alternative comedy, would have done, is fight back against censorship for free speech. So you start to see it's not just the MAGA hardcore, but there's a lot of people around in the culture thinking, maybe they have a point. We don't have to be conservative. You look at the tastes of Americans right now, like sex and drugs and rock and roll. You could argue there's never been a more permissive culture in America towards sexuality, as long as it's within this approved gender.
Okay.
Drugs. Like 18 million Americans now, because of the legalization of cannabis marijuana in certain states, are taking drugs every day or almost daily. That's more people than drink alcohol every single day. So look at rock and roll, Kid Rock and Snoop Dogg turning up to the inauguration. This counterculture saying, we are the rock music that your parents warned you against. And there's an embrace of that again, I think, by the MAGA people, but also it reflects something happening, I think, under the surface in the culture.
Just, I'm going to make a TV side note there, which is, if anyone hasn't seen Dave Chappelle's 17-minute monologue on Saturday Night Live a couple of weeks ago, you've seen it. It's absolutely one of the most fantastic pieces of comedy I've ever seen. But you couldn't pin him down on it as to, like, what he is or where he is. He comes up with a plea for let's just all get along by the end of it. But actually, it's flitting from traditional left-wing views to, possibly more permissive Trumpian views. And the second thing is, there's a kind of a genre of TV starting to filter through as well now, things like Landman and stuff like this, which are not coastal liberal kind of nice characters. It's people in Texas and stuff like that. It's like back to the days of Dallas.
And that goes to a deeper thing people don't see. Like, we think a lot about immigration. We think a lot about, you know, the dominance of LA and New York. But if you think about it, the same alternative media universe that created Joe Rogan is now creating and incubating new musical talent, new comedy talent. If you want to be a Dave Chappelle, you don't go on the chat shows anymore or do the comedy clubs. You get famous on TikTok. And if you want to be someone in music, you don't go to Manhattan to try and go down, you know, the new equivalent of Tin Pan Alley.
Yeah.
You actually look at Atlanta, which is the heart of a fusion of a lot of genres, primarily rap and hip hop. You look at Manhattan, it's been replaced by the clubs of Newark and Jersey Sound. And you look at the heartland of America now, places like North Carolina. You can jump on a tram in the downtown North Carolina. The wind farms of Texas deliver more energy than all the wind energy in France. But there's a real new dynamism in these places like Austin, Texas, like Miami, like Atlanta, the New South. And all the power, cultural power, is kind of coming into this group of places in the Midlands and in the far west. Again, the frontier spirit.
And we know nothing about these places. We never see them portrayed. We're unaware of them. And listen, how is the how is the religious right then, as it used to be known, but I don't know what you call it at this stage, but you know, the evangelical Christian movement, very much behind Trump, and there was always that question of how are they putting up with, you know, Trump's morals. How are they sitting with the permissiveness then of MAGA culture?
Well, they've always known this project for them is power. You know, in the end of the day, they'll put up with the kind of permissiveness that happens. You know, like looking, for example, at the hearings this week for the new defense secretary, who has a huge well of evidence against him around his sexual conduct, misconduct. And yet, you know, essentially some of them will basically pinch their noses and vote him through. I think what they see is a chance of power, because I think that moral majority has changed again, because it's not coming from the hardline, like Dixieland version of the South and the Alabama of the 60s. It's coming out of mega churches in the vast suburbs and exurbs of places like Phoenix, Arizona, Las Vegas, again, the new frontier lands. And it's slightly more moderate and in touch with modern culture. It doesn't exclude itself. It's not that sort of revivalist Christianity okay. that we know. And so it's really, really embedded in the popular culture. You go to a mega church on a Sunday in a place, let's say, like Albuquerque, New Mexico, they'll have a coffee shop, looks like Starbucks. They'll have five or six bands spread around this vast campus that looks like a shopping mall. And that is faith in the modern age. So it's deeply embedded in modern living. But at the same time then, that core Christian nationalism can be expressed in the frontier myth. So they can actually hold to the same myth that some young 25-year-old who's looking to the frontier to give them sort of that anti-elite sentiment. So it's an amazing how that common cause of the counterculture can yeah. go across contradictions in politics.
That and so people will go along with the bits that don't suit them to get the bits that suit them, essentially. Because, like, another question you could ask about that is, it seems weird that, like, I kind of thought coming away from watching the inauguration and, again, the culture around it, that it was reminiscent of a kind of a good old boy culture that we haven't seen for years, right? But then Black and Latino voters have kind of bought into this as well.
Yeah, I think part of this is because when you hear people like Mark Zuckerberg talking about masculine energy, we hear one thing, and justifiably, I think, but there's also coded messages in that. Because when you look at, for example, wellness in America, this overtaking of self-optimization, strength, vitality, success. You look at your Instagram feed, it's all full of people, men and women, who are putting themselves through all kinds of privations to be fitter, better, more successful. And so to that extent, I think that the manosphere, this masculinity, this misogyny is couched in self-improvement, which spans across a whole bunch of other communities, particularly like if you look at wellness online, it's one of those rabbit holes that leads into conspiracy. Robert okay. Kennedy, the new to be health czar in the new administration, is someone who's from the Democratic Party originally, was liberal, and has railed against the expertise on science. So you see these rabbit holes that take people down this place that we would never believe they could get to through this kind of strength, vitality of the myth of, and then that leads to your masculine energy. So yeah. there are various trapdoors, I think, in this counterculture that lead you to very extreme political positions. But what I'm saying, I think, is that counterculture itself is deeper and wider than we think and could outlast Donald Trump if the Tower of Contradictions collapses politically, socially, culturally. I think there's something here that's longer lasting.
Okay. So before I ask you the next question about that, it's extraordinary, though, when you think about it, that the last time there was a kind of a political movement around, you know, fit, perfecting yourself and everything, like the idea of ethnic groups getting on board with a semi-Aryan kind of ideology is absolutely bizarre. So that's interesting what you say then. So there's a change going on here that could outlive Trump and Trumpism, you think?
I think there is. And again, back to the point you just made there, for example, on the tech bros, like there's a deep philosophical belief among them in what they call futurism, which actually begins in the 1920s. It's actually the philosophy that leads to intellectuals buying into Mussolini, because it's about the idea that only an elite can really govern. So democracy doesn't really matter so much. So the rabbit hole can go down that far. But I want to emphasize again, MAGA is part of the counterculture. But the counterculture is not necessarily MAGA. I think it's very okay. liquid. I think in areas like comedy, music, it's not necessarily going to be regressive. I think you could argue that in the next 4 years, it's up for grabs for somebody from a, let's say, more authentic feeling culture. So if I give
okay,
you...
Okay, so Joe Rogan doesn't necessarily stick with Trump,
not
for
at
example.
All. He's
Joe
not...
Rogan will go to whoever seems to express freedom or whatever best.
He's not an ideologue in that sense. And you have to understand this kind of aesthetic of a younger person who's online a lot, right?
Okay.
So they've been told the elites, they don't care about the elites anymore. They don't read newspapers. They don't look at the television anymore. And for them, they don't have that vertical trust we used to have, right? We looked up to experts. We looked up to the newspaper, the news anchor. What they have is kind of horizontal trust. They kind of look around at their friends and their families and the people they respect who are just like them, but smarter. And they revere authenticity. They revere the sort of authentic weirdness of a podcaster giving them information. So their whole mentality is not ideological at all, but you're just like me, but smarter. And when they saw Kamala Harris, we all thought it was great. She had her brat summer and she embraced the memes. But I do believe that young person thought, there's something not quite authentic about this. But I think they would be open to somebody coming along who might be a populist of the left, could be an AOC, it could be someone like this who comes along and said, I hear you, economic justice is really important. I'm authentic, I'm of your culture. So this ground up culture and politics could go either way over this next generation. MAGA right now are in the driving seat, but I don't think that's necessarily so for this next generation who will come into political power.
So it's as has been suggested here about some elections in the past, that people loan their votes to people at particular times. This vote is on loan to MAGA right now, but it could equally, very quickly, presumably, flow in some other direction, because things don't move like icebergs anymore, do they? Like, it's all very fluid, isn't it?
Yeah, look at the last election. I mean, if you look at that, you look at every single group ethnically, in terms of demographics and gender, in terms of age, every group went toward Trump. But a lot of them, for example, African-Americans, who said, you know what, we haven't got anything from the Democratic Party. They treated us like some other voting bloc. If Donald Trump gets 2 years hence, he's made these grandiose promises. He doesn't have the mandate he claims, right? He has 1.5% majority in the popular vote, slim majority in Congress. He's promised everything to these people. 2 years hence, when his promises crash down, and you think about the African Americans going, well, yeah, I loaned the vote, and I'm not seeing anything happening here. It's collapsed. So I think that politically they could shift, but the power does not go back to the good old days. We're not going back to top-down media politics. This is the culture we're going to have for at least a generation. And so any politician thinks, just wait him out. Wait until his contradictions collapse around him. Wait until the tech bros leave him.
And he doesn't bring down the price of eggs.
Exactly. Yeah. But the culture itself is inhospitable to anyone who assumes that people think the way they thought back in 1968. So I think that is a very important caveat in all of this.
So what's the move for the Democrats in this?
Well, I think, obviously they've got to sit down and say to themselves, there's their perception, I think, that they went too far in response to the kind of Occupy Wall Street, Me Too movements, the cancel cultures that happened online, around the mid-noughties, and that they ignored economic justice. Whatever about the first, I think the second is quite clearly the truth. I think they did nothing to respond to the kind of precarious sense of young people in America today. So that's, I think, the core of what they've got to do. They lost the last election.
So Bernie Sanders could be back?
Bernie Sanders
blew in the face from telling the Democrats this for the last 10 years at this stage.
You see the memes surrounding Bernie Sanders over the past 10 years. I mean, he feels a lot more authentic because he's not trying to play down to the young people, to the kids. He's the granddad.
Yeah.
You know what? He's the kind of granddad you'd sit down and vote for. So I think, you have to imagine now, we've had this alternative media universe that created Joe Rogan, etc. How is that going to be something, and I'm not talking about people getting good podcasts to talk to young people, but how do you get into the psyche? Not what they're thinking, but how they're feeling about themselves and what mirror you're showing to them. And I think economic justice, equality, traditional left-wing things will be important, but there will also be, I say this again, like, it's anti-elite, anti-establishment. Do not tread on my personal freedom. I don't want to go back to a lockdown society of any kind. That anti-establishment, I think, is really deep wedded in this next generation.
And that word freedom, because when you're talking about this being like the 60s and now, the one word that's common through all of that is this notion of freedom, which it's much more visceral notion in America, isn't it, than it is here, the idea of my freedom and the government not interfering with that.
Yeah, and if you think about, democracy was the big thing in the last election for the Democrats. This could be the end of democracy.
Yeah.
Democracy then became fun at the Democratic convention. And I think young people go, democracy? Freedom? Freedom is what I think about a lot. I think about that sort of countercultural sense that I have the power in my hands. So don't talk to me about some democracy. Because if you think about it this way, democracy right now has big competition from make your country great again. A nostalgic past didn't exist. Now Trump has wedded that to a science fiction view of the future in which we're going to colonize Mars. He's got a story about the past. He's got a story about the future. The autocrats over in China have their story about freedom as well. It's all about economics. In the middle, poor old liberal democracy looks small. It looks like the kind of spot we had during the week in Ireland. That's what it's all about. It's short-term horizons. You don't get the same sense that over time, democracy can compete with the idea of the golden age, the manifest destiny of the frontier. So democracy...
Because it's not exciting enough anymore, is it?
Well, it doesn't feel real, right? It feels okay, like something hear about in your civics class or in your history class. But when it comes down to it, the freedom I have when I take that phone out of my pocket in the morning...
Or that gun out of my pocket in the morning in America. Again. Yeah.
And again, this is, for me, the outlaw sheriff analogy for me always explains US history. So we've had the sheriff of social justice, the conservatives would say to us, now we want the outlaw.
Okay, so Biden was the sheriff, yeah?
Yeah, and if you think
about... Trump is the outlaw now.
Yeah, and post-war America is also the sheriff, right up until the 60s, the world's global
policeman,
world order.
Literally, we used to
right
talk
Right up to
about.
The 90s, new world order, we had globalization, free trade, all that kind of stuff. That was the sheriff, America standing there for democracy in the world. Now this outlaw America is emerging, and it can go different ways. It can go down to the religious right vision of it, or it could be this young person coming of age right now, knowing the power they have in their digital lives, looks nothing like this complete ancient institution of democracy that gives them a vote every 4 years but never listens. And so that, I think, is where we have this sort of very, very dangerous era for liberal democracy. But what has to happen, democracy has to be more direct, deliberative, and ground up. And I think if the culture of America right now tells us anything, it's that that counterculture right now is more powerful than any appeal to people's sense of history. And I think that's where the fear I have. But I also have a certain excitement of, we don't know what this will happen. The fusion of culture right now, by the way, in America, where you have country music and rap be mixed together because people have control over it themselves. It doesn't have to go through the record shop or the label. There is a very exciting, frenetic, almost feral energy in that counterculture.
Okay.
That I think we
and listen, is it transracial as well?
Transgenerational.
Transracial though.
Oh yeah, I mean I think if you think about God and country, and there was a lot of patriotism, religion in the sense in that speech that Trump made on Monday.
Yeah, that kind of talk we can traditionally associate with a touch of white supremacy.
Exactly. But remember when he's talking about God, flag, army. Not talking about Christianity, nationalism, fighting foreign wars. What that means is God can be Allah, Yahweh. It can be the God of the Arab American in Dearborn, Michigan. It could be the God of the Christian. It could be the God of the Protestant. It could be the God of any religion. So it's faith. That's the key thing. So that seems inclusive now to people who possibly in the past did associate religion with white nationalism. Equally then, I think on faith and country. If you think about the army, right? The Army is the greatest civic organization in the United States. It's the greatest source of employment for low-income Americans. You go to America and you say to a person you meet who's in the service, thank you for your service. So the idea of us associating the military power of the United States with imperialism, for a lot of Americans, it's a way of social mobility. So you can see why African Americans, people of different ethnic backgrounds, could rally to an idea of faith and country that's not strictly Christian nationalist. And I think that's, again, why you see it moving across into groups that previously were solidly democratic. Immigration's a good example of this. If you're a second-generation immigrant in a place like the southern border towns of Texas, the vote for Trump was off the charts because for them, they came legally and fairly, and they're being told this next generation that are coming unfairly and illegally, and they're undermining the very notion of the American identity. So that's why he's getting those groups as well. Again, the common theme is fighting back against the establishment.
So he has essentially tapped into way deeper archetypes in people than anyone else has managed to do. And also, if the Democrats are kind of about how people should be, Trump understands how people are, right or wrong, yeah?
Which brings back to the point about the attention economy.
Yeah.
We live in an age of spectacle, and the power will accrue to the people who understand the power of spectacle, not in their brain, but in their tummy and their stomach.
And this is why Zuckerberg and Musk and all of them were standing up there next to Trump, because they are the ones who control the attention.
Yes. Yeah. And I really do believe that we have this probably misapprehension that in some ways they're bowing the knee to Musk. Musk and people like that are bound to need to Trump. I actually think Trump needs them more then Silicon Valley need Trump.
Are they going to stick with him? Because like they've all done fairly radical U-turns from their liberal origins already.
I don't see how Musk and Trump can get along the way they're going at the moment. But I do believe that people like Zuckerberg and Jeff Bezos and a lot of the Silicon Valley evangelists as well see themselves as more powerful than democratic states. Like, think about Apple, $3 trillion in its market value. That's more than the value of all the FTSE 100 companies in London. So these are powerful states. They're no longer tech companies. And what you now have is a balance of power shifting from Washington, D.C. over to Silicon Valley, to the original frontier of California. So the tech bros, whether or not they stay with Trump, I think are in some ways the inheritors of this counterculture in the long term. Even if Trump stumbles politically, they're the people who live and die on this new frontier. And they're the people, okay. I think.
And they're the ones who pick the next president.
Yep, and stand behind them in the rotunda of the Capitol building.
Okay, that is all extra. That's now was one of the best descriptions of America I've heard in taking in a lot of them over the last months. So to sum up, would we say that we are at some kind of cultural tipping point here as regards America and what we traditionally saw America as? America could look very, very different from here on.
I think it does. And I think by focusing too much just on the politics, we look at the symptoms of what's happening. And I do think America's history has always been the sheriff and outlaw battle. We're now entering the era of the outlaw. And that's been driven a lot by technology as well. But at the same time, I would say, I'm not saying that America has now suddenly shifted to the right. You've got about 30% of Americans who always vote for the conservative, probably the similar, always vote for the liberal. So what's at stake here is the dynamic middle part. Okay. And right now the dynamism is in the anti-establishment belief. It's the easy rider vision of setting out to a new future. It's exciting, it's vibrant, and it's not looking backwards. So that's in play. It doesn't mean it has to be Trump who farms that. But Democratic politicians with a capital D and a small d, American politicians, Irish politicians, others have to realize that this is coming for them as well, I think, in this era of a universal kind of internet, at least a free internet.
Okay, they all need to listen to this back on podcast, as I'm sure a lot of people will. Mark Little, as always, that was extraordinary. I think that was your best one yet. Oh, loved it. Brilliant. Okay, thank you very much. We'll take a break.